across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Return of the Unexplained. Well, I hope you're keeping well. I don't know what stage of lockdown you're into or out of right now, but I hope that everything is okay with you. And thank you very much for all of your emails. I'm going to do a few shout-outs and mentions. I'm getting so much email at the moment. Unfortunately, I can't respond to everybody here on the show or indeed send personal replies every time. But please know that I get a chance to sit down and read all of your emails, usually in the evenings. And I'm really grateful to you for telling me your stories of lockdown, sending me your personal stories, and, you know, just communicating with me. We've become a kind of, through this period, a kind of mutual support network. And I've been really, really grateful for everything that you've said. So thank you very much. The destination, if you want to send me an email or make a donation to the show, is theunexplained.tv. That's my website and has been for years and years and years. And if you have made a donation to the show recently, thank you very much indeed. The guest on this edition of The Unexplained, it is classic Unexplained material. We're going to be speaking with Stephen Williams, the founder of the Memphis Ghost Investigation and Spirit Rescue Team. They sound like a very organized group of people. With some great stories to tell, I think, so we're going to hear them very soon. But before we do that, let's just mention a few people here. Rich in Ellesmere Port. Now, Laura got in touch with me when I was doing my radio show a couple of nights ago. But when I'm on the air, I don't get to see emails. I get to see tweets, and I can see texts. They send them to me. But I can't see emails until after the show. So Laura wanted me to wish you, Rich, in Ellesmere Port in Cheshire, a happy birthday. And I couldn't do it on the show, but I can certainly do it now. So, Rich, I hope you had a blast of a day and many, many happy returns. That's from Laura and from me. Elizabeth in Melbourne, nice to hear from you. Scott in Louisiana, thank you very much for your email and comments. Adam in Stenning, Sussex, not far from Worthing. Nice to hear from you, Adam, and thank you for what you said. Patrick, nice comments and a few questions for Paul Hellier, if he's back on the show sometime. Alan in Derbyshire, some points that you'd like me to make to David Paulides when he returns will do. What else? Steve sent me an email about Paul Sinclair and also made some nice comments about the show. Thank you very much, Steve. Steve Ovell. Lewis in Canberra. What a kind email, Lewis. Thank you very much. And I hope that we're able to see you back in the United Kingdom soon. I know you had to postpone a trip because of coronavirus. So many aspects of our lives affected by this. But I hope that you're able to get back here and enjoy the UK as soon as you can. And I want to be traveling again soon, too. Story from Joanne. Thank you, Joanne, for this. Basically, a story about her husband who was working as a baker in a Safeway supermarket very late at night, 2 in the morning. He turned round after feeling a presence behind him, and this black mass passed right through him. Now, we've heard these stories before, sometimes in relation to shadow people. But he was always a skeptic, and I don't think, Joanne, he was a skeptic after this. Thank you very much for telling me that story. It is, it's a great one. Thank you for all of your stories and for the things that you say. And what else? Oh, Ken. Ken, thank you for the big cat story. Ken tells me this story from the east of England. 25 years ago, he was out cycling with a friend, not far from Peterborough, very quiet roads. From 100 feet away, we saw what I thought at first was a big black Labrador nonchalantly walk from a farm across the road to some woodland. So we got a little closer. I could see it had a long tail, very cat-like, more like a panther. It didn't take any notice of us and walked calmly into the woods. About 2 weeks later, there was a report on the local TV news, Anglia Television as it was, and BBC East. There was a black cat spotted near Wansford, about 5 miles from the location that we saw what we saw. There are more and more of these sightings. Of course, recently we've been talking with Rick Minter, and there are more things of that nature happening in Gloucestershire at the moment. So we'll do more about big cats. They seem to have thrived in the United Kingdom during the time of lockdown. Now, let's get to the guest. We're going to cross to the United States now, Memphis, Tennessee, home of Elvis Presley, of course. We're going to talk with Stephen Williams, the founder of the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team. So hopefully he's there right now. Stephen, thank you very much for coming on The Unexplained.
Thank you for having me, Howard.
Now, Stephen, I have to say that I'm very impressed by your extremely professional approach to all of this for two reasons. Number one, you sent me an email telling me about yourselves, and that was very professionally put together, I thought. And then I went to your website, and I thought that is an object lesson in how to do a website. So you take what you do very seriously, don't you?
I do, and I'm also a graphic designer, which makes it easy to put together a very nice website. So
okay,
that's part of what I do.
Okay, well, you know, that's the way to get yourself out there, and you certainly do that really well. So
well,
Memphis, Tennessee, I mean, most of us know Memphis for one thing, the King, Elvis Presley, you know, started his career not far from there, and, you know, that was his place, wasn't it?
Correct.
The presence of Elvis, and I mean, you know, both in terms of history and I suppose in terms of spiritually, is it still there in Memphis?
It is, and actually I have encountered the crossed-over spirit of Elvis at Graceland when I took some friends of mine there that were mediums. So we can talk about that if you like.
Absolutely.
Sometime.
Let's. That's prepared my listener for that. Let's definitely get into that. I was wondering if you've done that, and I'm really pleased that you have. Okay, talk to me about the team then, because everything about you is different, it seems to me. You are the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team. Now, Spirit Rescue is not something that I normally associate with people doing the kind of stuff that you do. But you say that Spirit Rescue is a really important part of your work. So what is it and why so?
Yes, it is the focus of our work. So I've been investigating reports of paranormal activity in our area here for about 18 years, and actually throughout the Southeast U.S. and up into Canada. But I started in 2002, so about 3 or 4 years into my investigation work, I just had a kind of an epiphany, and it was, we go into someone's home, we discover evidence that there's something happening there, we report that evidence to the homeowner, and then we leave. And it really doesn't affect any kind of positive change in the situation. So about that time, I was introduced to a medium whom I met in St. Augustine, Florida. And she, through an encounter we both had there, she introduced me to the idea of spirit rescue. And so for 13 years, that's been my focus. And because it's important not only to be able to provide answers and some evidence to the homeowner, business owner, but also to restore their lives back to normal, you know, in a sense, and help the spirits there to
transition. And you make it sound like most of the people who get in touch see the presence of the presence, if you see what I'm saying, as a problem.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they don't contact us unless they're, you know, fairly certain that something is happening in their home or business. So, and most of the time when we go into a location, I was just in a house last night, and there was a young lady there who was a friend of the homeowner. And unfortunately, she had gotten into a lifestyle of drugs and so forth and had OD'd. And she was there, and her presence was there, and she needed help in crossing and releasing. So that was another opportunity to help someone move on.
Okay, and you say that obviously you see a large part of what you do is being able to affect change. In that situation where there is somebody who died in traumatic circumstances and clearly is not aware that she's, maybe she is aware that she's in limbo between here and whatever comes next, what can you do?
Well, what we did last night, my partners are Kayla Bales and Jennifer Brooks, and they were not available to be with me last night. So they're capable of working remotely. So I had Kayla connect. I was kind of like the barometer there, I guess, when I got to the site. I have some abilities myself. I'm clairsentient. I can feel the energy of spirits and can distinguish some things about them. But my partner's more clairaudient, more clairvoyant than I am, and she was actually able to get a good description of this person, and we were able to kind of get a dialogue going with her, and she had basically come to her friend's house because that was the last place she had lived the week before she passed, and I guess she felt safe and comfortable there. So our job was to find out why she was there, and then to help her raise her vibration to the point that she was aware of her loved ones who had come for her. And so our job has kind of become a bridge between the earth plane and the higher dimensions, to where those spirits that are kind of lost, confused, or wandering can make that connection and move on.
Now, that is going to be very interesting to a lot of people listening to this who may not know too much about the kind of things that you do. Because a lot of people, you know, if they read the newspapers and they listen to, you know, radio shows like the ones that that I do, they may think that a ghost in a place is either something that becomes a tourist attraction, or it's a real headache for the owners of a property because it's causing them, you know, sleepless nights and that kind of thing. But what they don't realize, and what I didn't fully realize, is, of course, it's not only a problem for the people who own the property and live in it, it's also a problem for whatever is trapped there, perhaps not wanting to be there.
True. Yes. Most of the times when we encounter spirits in a home, they're searching. It's a cry for help when they do the things that they do, when they create the disturbances, because they don't know. People move into a space that they feel like is their space. And that's frustrating when they try to let people know that they are there and that they're needing some help. And they will do all these kinds of things, like turn lights on and off and knock and, you know, touch people and so forth. But usually it's not anything where they're trying to be bothersome in a sense, but just more like a cry for help. Just, you know, I'm here. You know, can you help me somehow?
And this poor woman who you were helping last night, as we record mm-hmm. this, how was she indicating her presence? How was she making herself known?
She was knocking. A lot of times when the homeowner was getting ready for bed, she would knock on the walls in the room. And her energy was concentrated in his bedroom because I walked through the whole house. And although I did feel her presence when I first walked in, it was strongest back in the bedroom there. So she would knock. She actually pushed him a couple of times to try to get his attention. It wasn't anything threatening. I think he was almost about to roll off the bed, in the position he was in on the bed is what he told me. And she kind of pushed him back onto the bed in a sense. So, you know, she was just trying to let him know that she was there.
Okay. And what sense are you able to get of the state of, if you can say state of mind, but the state of existence that the person is in? What sort of sense of her state of mind, state of being, mm-hmm. were you able to get? Because she passed, as you said, in tragic, traumatic circumstances, and presumably right. being in limbo between one world and the next, she's still in the same state.
Right. Well, my medium that I was had on the job there with me remotely was able to sense her distress and get a little bit of information even remotely. So it was obvious that she was needing some help and she was confused. In fact, Kayla told me, she was texting to me during this time, and she said, it's almost like there's a blockage. And so, you know, through some of the text information she gave me, I was able to determine that this spirit was really having a tough time communicating. She was kind of in a foggy state, which made perfect sense when the client told me the circumstances. She actually overdosed in a department store parking lot, and it was sudden. And so I think the reason she came back to his home was that he had offered her a place to stay. She had actually lived there for 1 week right before this happened. So I think in her mind, that was her safe place. And she went back to him to ask him, you know, for some help.
And how are you able to ascertain, you know, what kind of state they're in? In other words, what they're experiencing, and the fact that, you know, the spirit may be distressed and may realize that, you know, I'm not in the place that I'm supposed to be, and I passed in traumatic circumstances. This is all a mess. How are you able to divine that from what you're communicating with, if you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, the mediums that I work with are clairaudient, so they actually hear the thoughts of the spirits.
So they were talking to
them. It's a dialogue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a dialogue they get going back and forth. Me, personally, I am clairsentient and claircognizant, so I can walk into a home, like if I were to come into your home, Howard, and you had a spirit in there, I would be able to tell you if it was a male spirit, a female spirit, if it's what we call earthbound, or if it's one of your crossed-over relatives. Sometimes we encounter that, where families are having some kind of crisis in their family, and it'll be a family member who's crossed over who will come back and forth and do things to try to get the attention of their family members and maybe you know, affect some kind of change that way. A lot of times they will leave coins, pennies, dimes, or sometimes feathers. And I've had many instances where I've actually been in a home. There were pennies up and down the hallway. I remember one time we picked all the pennies up. We walked into a room, just me and the lady, were there alone, and came out 2 minutes later, and there were pennies all up and down the hallway. So that was a relative who was really trying to get that person's attention.
Mm. So a lot of it is symbolic. They use symbols. You say the feathers, mm-hmm. which we hear about all
absolutely.
The time. I mean, look,
right.
I experience the pennies here myself, and I don't routinely go out of this flat, this apartment with
right.
you know, I go out with, you know, with notes, but never pennies. But sometimes I see pennies lying around this place, and I sometimes think to myself, well, maybe that's my mother and father. Who knows? But I don't give it any more thought than that.
Right. I always advise my clients, if you find those types of gifts, mm-hmm. you know, find a special container and put it up on the mantle or some, you know, some shelf that's in a prominent place.
Really?
Because those literally are pennies from heaven. Mm-hmm. Those are gifts from your loved ones to let you know that they're around and they're watching over you and they're aware of what's going on. They have a wider perspective. So they will, you know, they'll give you those gifts just to let you know that they're there in support.
So do you believe that they... And we hear the story of coins and pennies or, you know, cents, whatever, being left mm-hmm. As a sign. We hear that story all the time. Do they just appear or are they in the place already?
No, they materialized them somehow. We were in a home in Jackson, Tennessee, which is near Memphis, and there was a little girl in that home named Lily that we encountered, and she had... manifested in certain ways there in the home prior to our visit. And while we were actually there, almost finished with our investigation and packing up, we were all sitting around the living room, and out of midair, a penny dropped onto Kayla's lap. So that was an apport, what's called an apport. Mm. And they just are able to energetically manipulate objects and move them around. So that was quite interesting to see that penny just pop out of nowhere.
Hmm. Back to the investigation you were on last night and this young woman mm-hmm. who's clearly in a state of torment. How aware of her surroundings was she? She clearly knew where she was going because it had been a place she'd been before and obviously felt some degree of comfort there. So she went back there. But how right. aware of her own situation, I guess is the way to put it, was she?
I think she was quite aware. She was just, I think also though she, because of her drug use, you know, she had some mental impairment going on from that, you know, probably in a state of mind that she was still under that influence. And so there was some cloudiness there. I don't think she was, you know, 100% in terms of her mental capacity. And she also had a young child, so there was that added dimension that there was some guilt there. I think it was an accidental overdose, mm-hmm. and someone had given her something, some drug or something that was not what she expected, and it caused her death. But she had a young child, the client told us about that, and so I think there was a lot of guilt there. But, you know, I just explained to her if she would go ahead and make the transition, she'd be able to help her child even a lot better than she would in the state that she's in right now, because she could actually be kind of like a guardian angel to the child or a spirit guide, and she liked that idea. So, mm-hmm. And we always call on, you never know who the perfect loved one is. You don't know if... the spirit that you're working with has a good relationship with a family member. Maybe they didn't like their father, didn't like their mother, or some kind of, you know, some things happened during their lifetime. So the allies that we work with on the other side, we always ask them to bring the perfect loved ones. I used to have to ask for that, mm-hmm. but now when it becomes the time comes for the crossing, or when the spirit seems to be ready for that, they just show up automatically. So they always bring send the perfect person that spirit will recognize and be comfortable with.
So you kind of ask of the people who are close to you, like your family members or whatever, who would you most like to see?
Yes. Well, I just always ask for the perfect loved one to be brought to the spirit that we're working with. Yes.
And that happens. Okay. Now.
Yeah, it does automatically.
Obviously, not everybody who's listening to this now believes in all of this. And, you know, there are a lot of people who take a very, and I understand why they do, take a very skeptical view of it all. And they might say, well, you know, the person who's living at that address might have had a couple of issues, could have been caused by anything. But of course, the first thing the mind of that person would go to, and a lot of people would go to, is it's this troubled young person who lived in this home who's come back. And so everybody starts thinking that, and it might not be that at all.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, all I can say is that over the years working in 13 years in Spirit Rescue, what we do is when someone contacts us, we only ask for generalities. I only want to know if they have seen an apparition, if they've heard any auditory phenomena, that type of thing. I don't ask if they've seen a specific spirit of a certain age wearing certain types of clothing. So we go in with minimal information.
Right. So you didn't ask the person, this was a guy, wasn't it? You didn't ask him.
Right. No, I didn't know anything about what
right.
was going
you,
on.
You didn't ask him, who do you think this might be? That's interesting.
No, okay. No. And so we go in, and especially when Jennifer and Kayla are both able to go with me, I don't tell them anything. So they go in completely blind. I know a minimal amount of information. And so we go into a place, and we maybe spend an hour or two. That's usually all it takes. And we just do a walkthrough. They will be drawn to certain areas. We'll encounter a spirit here or there and work with them along the way. Or if they're not ready to receive counseling at that point, we'll go back at the end and do some more work with them. And it's usually when the information that we receive clairaudiently, clairvoyantly, corresponds to the experiences that the client has had perfectly. So they will, without knowing that they've seen a small child, in blue jeans and a checkered shirt, if we encounter that spirit along the way and find them there and talk to them, and at the end when we present our findings to the client, it matches up to what they've seen. So they know that they've had a valid experience, and then we also get information about where the spirit has come from. Sometimes they're attached to objects. Sometimes they were on the land. There's just all kinds of different reasons as to where they are, what their origin is.
And in this particular place, you mentioned counseling. Who is it you'd be counseling? Are you counseling the spirit, or are you counseling the person who lives in the property?
Counseling the spirit initially, because anytime we're doing our walkthrough at any location and we encounter a spirit, we're going to, number one, try to find out why they're there, where they've come from. And then generally explain to them, that they have options. Everything is free will, so it's not our job to come in and move someone out. But we feel like we're kind of like spirit social services, in a sense. Hmm. So we provide counseling and explain to them that they have options, that, their particular point in this journey is not the end, that there's more for them. There are more experiences and opportunities for them if they go ahead and go towards the light. People talk about this light. Well, I think it's more like a vibrational thing. So our job is to help them, their awareness become clearer to where they're able to see that they do have those opportunities and see those people that are waiting for them that have already made that transition. So we're kind of like a bridge. Vibrational bridge.
And what was she telling you about her experience of you and the place that you were in and her immediate surroundings as she was aware of them?
Well, she was still kind of cloudy in her perceptions. So Kayla got a really good visual on her. She described a young woman who was about 5'5", with long brown curly hair. And when I gave that description to the client, he nodded. He said, okay, I know who that is. And eventually at one point he pulled out a picture, and that perfectly matched who she was seeing and talking to. And so it was basically she was kind of ashamed and guilty feeling about what had happened. And she had just gone to her friend's house, and that was the last place she remembered being. So she was doing all kinds of things to try to get his attention. He had actually called in a different paranormal investigation team in our area, and they had gone in and recorded some EVPs. and that type of thing. We don't really, we're not, our focus isn't on evidence collection anymore. It's more on going in and counseling and helping those spirits transition. So, but there had been, you know, someone else had done a little work in there and had provided some information to him prior to my visit last night.
Right. Now, some people feel called to be lifeguards. Some people feel called to join the police. Some people join the church or whatever. You felt a calling to do this. Why did you feel a calling to do this? Why did you think that this was your thing to do?
Well, I would say an experience I had back in 2006. I was in St. Augustine, Florida, and I was there on a family vacation with my daughter. And St. Augustine, Florida is allegedly the oldest city in the U.S. It's got many layers of history, you know, French, English, Spanish, American, Native American, of course. And we were down there on a family vacation, and at one point we were about ready to come home, and we had one more night there, and we were riding bicycles through the city. And we stopped at a little cemetery that's well known down there. There's a haunting associated with it. And I just had this knowing that there was a little girl that was standing in an alley between the cemetery and a house. And so I told my daughter to go on down to the entrance of the cemetery. I had an EMF meter with me. I knew exactly what this little girl looked like. I knew what her name was. That was really kind of my first major mediumship or psychic type experience in my life. And so I would ask her questions or make statements, rather. I would say, "You're a little girl, right?" And she would make my equipment light up and make noise. And so she was using the equipment to validate what I was saying to her. And her name was Alice. She was about 6 years old. She was wearing a blue dress. She had blonde hair. And so that was in July of that year. I came back in September, was invited to speak at a conference there. And I met a medium named Linda from the Jacksonville, Florida area. And I didn't tell her anything about this little girl. And we were walking back to our hotel from a place downtown. And so I made a special trip by this house and didn't tell her anything about it. As we walked past the house, she turned and looked. She said, "Oh, there's a little girl up on the front porch." And she described this little girl perfectly. So I knew she was a genuine medium. So the next night, unbeknownst to me, she went back and helped this little girl cross over. And so that was my introduction to Spirit Rescue. And that little girl, Alice, actually helps us now. She comes around when we're working with child spirits. And because of her innocence and purity, they feel really comfortable when she's around. So that was my introduction. And then I met a lot of different mediums and worked with different mediums, learned from them, and developed my own techniques. But yeah, it's a passion for me. It really is.
And you said this little girl, that was a fascinating story and a moving one, too, comes back to help you. So
yes,
it isn't a one-way trip, then. If you help a spirit cross from limbo between this world and the next, they can come back if they want to.
Absolutely. It's almost like they have a hall pass, so they can come and go as they wish. But she, mediums, she's kind of like my test for mediums, because if they see her around me, I know they're a genuine medium. And that's happened many times. And people describe her now as having like a golden glow around her. So she's actually a spirit rescue who now has become a rescuer herself, which is kind of interesting.
Do you get spirits who don't want to go?
Oh, sure.
And what do you do with them?
I could tell you, Howard, you know, the flat you're living in, you know, that's not really where you should be. Yeah, I think you should be living across town at a different place. And, you know, you could listen to me and you could decide whether or not you want to make that move or not. So it's the same thing with spirits, but Our goal is to, anytime we encounter someone, and I honestly feel spirits everywhere. I mean, I could be walking in our local Walmart here and feel a spirit around someone, or I could be driving down the street and feel someone get in the car with me. So I feel like my responsibility and our team's responsibility is to explain to any spirit whom we encounter that they have options. And
do those options, sorry to interrupt, do those options include staying here?
Absolutely. I mean, let's think about it. Their part of their journey could be having the experience of being earthbound spirit. Maybe that's what's needed for their spiritual growth. So it's not our place to decide whether or not someone stays or goes. I think it's our responsibility, though, to explain to them, especially it seems like in the case of the girl last night, she didn't know she had the option to go. She had kind of hit a roadblock, so to speak. And so it almost takes a human agent to come in and provide, you know, a way for them to make that transition as a connection to higher vibration. So,
do you come across people who are stuck between here and there, who've been evil in their life? You know, they're not just people who've had sad experiences or traumas or, you know, past like that poor young woman, but maybe they've been people who've murdered other human beings or they've done terrible things. Do you ever come across evil?
Sure. I mean, it's just as varied as the people that are out in our world right now. So, I mean, there are certain people we would not want to meet on a dark street, you know, by ourselves tonight. So as long as, I mean, we always approach every situation with compassion, because I believe that people that have separated themselves from God, from Source, whatever you want to call it, you know, they need help to try to get to a higher vibration too. The only time where we call on assistance and when it goes beyond just simple counseling is when there's someone there that is so malicious that they will not listen to reason at all, and all they're intent on doing is to causing harm to someone or to traumatize children or, you know, just be a troublesome from there on out. So we do have allies on the other side that we call on at that point, and it's their decision, you know, whether or not they take them out. Normally they take them somewhere. I don't know where they take them, but yeah, there's ways to deal with that.
Well, really, but you can kind of call in, you know, a team of sort of nightclub bouncers from the other side to clear
the
bouncers.
Them out. Wow. They really are.
Gee, I'd never heard that before. That's astonishing. So can you do that in every case? If there is something malevolent around a location and it's causing havoc for the people who live in or use that location, you can have them cleared out by calling in your friends.
Right. And here's an example of that. We were working in a school. I used to teach paranormal investigator training workshops, and there was a school here in this area that was open to that. So there was a little girl that people had seen in the school for many, many years. And she actually, I talked to the director of the facility, and she said this little girl had come in and asked to use the telephone at one point. And she turned around to get the phone and turned back, and she had vanished. And so we connected with this little girl and called on her loved one, and her father showed up. But there was this really malevolent spirit who had worked at the school. He was either like a janitor or maintenance worker. And I've encountered situations where there are spirits that are dominant that will kind of set up their own little kingdoms, so to speak. So he, I think, considered this little girl part of his kingdom and was not going to let her go. So he stepped in between the child and the father. And instinctively, I called on our ally, and I had my eyes closed, but everyone in my workshop, there was about eight people that were standing around, said this really bright light came down the hallway, and immediately that spirit was taken away. So he was not allowed to interfere with that crossing. And I don't, like I said, I don't know where they take them. Maybe a correctional facility. I have no idea. But he was removed.
What do you understand from what you've been through and what you've investigated of the journey between this life and the next life? You know, I kind of like to believe that we do go on in some form. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends who tell me that when you're done here, then it's oblivion. There's nothing. And I've never really believed that. I've seen enough things that have happened around me to make me believe that that ain't so. But it seems to me the journey, from what I've understood in my own life, is different for different people. Like, if I tell you about my mother suffered to an extent in hospital, a large extent in hospital, before she died. It was very tragic. She had an amputation, and she was due to have another. I've never told this story before on any of the podcasts or radio, but she was due to have a second leg amputated. And my heart bled for her, and she died on the morning of the second amputation, because it would have been way too much for her to go through. And I think she kind of decided to check out at that point. And I totally understood that. And I always felt that she was at peace after that. And yeah, apart from having a dream that featured her the night that she died, and she came and asked me if I was okay, which might have just been my mind, you know, creating that for me. I don't know, but a lot of people have that experience. So I feel that my mother went on to another place. And, right. You know, I don't think I particularly heard from her. She might be keeping an eye on me. I don't know. My dad's a different issue. My dad, I've kind of always felt that because he was very, you know, when I was, he loved me as much when I was 40 as when I was 4 years of age. You know, I was always his boy. And I've always kind of felt that he was around. So it strikes me from this very personal example, although I don't entirely understand it, that when people pass over, they have different experiences of the journey. It's not the same journey for everybody.
I agree with that. And I think you have the opportunity to create your own reality as the journey continues. Now, my parents both passed into spirit within the last 2 years. My mom actually visited both my brother and I on the night of her passing. I was in California visiting my daughter, and she came to me at the moment of her passing, and my body was just pretty much electrified from head to toe. She woke me up out of a deep sleep. So I knew that was her. And then she also visited my brother a couple hours before that. My dad, he showed me for about a month after he passed away. He was in service, and he showed me little American flags everywhere. I'm just in the oddest places. I'd be walking a path, and there'd be an American flag stuck in a bridge, like a part of a bridge or something. And that lasted about a month. So I knew that he was showing me that he was okay. That was his way of saying that. And we have a really gifted medium friend here in the Memphis area named Sheila. She's always the person I send people to for readings, for to connect them with their loved ones. But I actually had a reading with her after my dad passed. And what he told her, I mean, she didn't know anything about my father, was that he was studying architecture. Now, my dad had a college. He did not go to college. He had a high school education. He was raised on a farm and didn't have the opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. But he could, if he could imagine anything in his mind, he could build it. He was mechanically inclined and very creative in that way. So that made perfect sense to me that he did not have an opportunity to study architecture. So there must be schools there. There must be, you know, all kinds of learning that goes on.
I wonder. I suppose we're not going to know until it's our time.
And
just on that theme, and I don't know why I'm asking you this, but it's a question I'm sure, you know, a lot of people think about. Everybody will think about eventually. When it comes our time to go, what is that like? Are we taken out of the situation? You know, say some people die horribly, don't they, in plane crashes and things like that. As far as you are aware, are they taken out of that situation just at the crucial moment where, you know, horribly the plane hits the ground or whatever?
Well, the mediums that I've worked with, I've been blessed to work with about a dozen mediums over my 18-year career of doing this. They all describe it slightly differently. One medium I worked with said there's almost like a slit of light that opens up, and it's like almost like an elevator door that opens up. And if you look into that, you can see people. You can see loved ones. So another one described it as a horizon that kind of opened up, and you could see people as far as you could look. So I think when your time comes, if you're, because I'm ready, I mean, I love my life here, but when that time comes, I'm going to be looking for those people that are going to be there for me. And I think that as long as you're in a state of mind that you're comfortable with the idea of an afterlife, I think it'll be an easy transition for that person. And if that person has never thought about it, or has had no experiences with it,
or doesn't want to go,
loves their life. Yeah, I mean, we encounter spirits who, there was one guy who built a house, and when we talked to him, he said, no, I'm not leaving my house. You know, this is my crowning achievement of my life, you know, and nobody, I don't like these people that moved in my house. This is my house.
Gee, this old house, there he is. He wants to stay there.
Yeah. So we said, well, how would you like to build another house? Uh-huh. You know, the grandest house you can imagine. And that got his attention. So it's a lot of psychology and counseling. And I do believe that you create your own reality in the next step. So, there's a lot of you have to find out their desires and their needs.
Now, this question is the typical kind of smart-ass radio presenter's question, and I don't mean to ask it like this, because that's not me at all. That's why I do this show. However, it is a question I've asked a number of times, and I've heard other people ask this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are people you would think would be very likely to make their presence felt from the other side. All kinds of people who you would think, you know, they've got a spiritual side to them, or they were very famous here, or they'd even told people around them, you know, when I go, I'm going to be coming back. And a lot of those people don't. Why is that?
I don't have a good answer for that. I wanted to hear from my paternal grandmother for years and years, and she never, in readings and so forth, she never came through. And I always wondered, because she was one of my favorites, and I know I was one of her favorite grandchildren. Why does she not want to let me know she's around or talk with me? And then eventually she did. She did come through. It was years and years later. But my interpretation of that is they're busy with things over there. Maybe there's healing that needs to take place, or maybe there's a lot of learning, or maybe it's in my highest good that she did not come until later. I think there's a wider perspective from the other side. Now, whether these people that make those declarations that I'm coming back or whatever, maybe they just don't have the skill to do that. Maybe there's a learning process. I don't really understand everything about it, of course, and I don't think nobody will. Until you get there.
Yeah. Maybe, of course, they just get to the other side and they just don't think it's important anymore.
Could be.
Who knows? Neither of us knows. That's half the intrigue of the thing. Now, you've done a whole bunch of investigations, not only in Memphis, but in other places. And I wouldn't mind talking about a couple of those. I don't know which are your favorites in Memphis. I've got a list of them here. I love the sound of the Orpheum Theater. You've done a few investigations in theaters, but I love the sound of the Orpheum Theater, Memphis.
Right. Orpheum Theater is probably one of our most famous hauntings here. There's a little girl that they have tagged her with the name Mary that a lot of people have seen there through the years. And the story goes that she was killed outside in front of the theater, struck by a carriage. Well, about 7 or 8 years ago, we were invited to go into that theater by a local radio station. And so we had pretty much had the run of the place for about 2 or 3 hours. And my friend Linda, who I mentioned earlier, from Jacksonville, was in town. And so she went with me, and another medium went with me. And we actually connected with that little girl. And she has a favorite seat that she likes to sit in the theater. A lot of people would see her sitting up in the balcony in this seat. She did talk to us. Her name was not Mary. I don't recall what it was offhand, but she had lived nearby, and she had not. What she told us was she was not involved in an accident or anything like that. That she had died of the yellow fever, which struck Memphis and claimed a lot of lives in the 1870s. So we actually had a gentleman there who plays the organ in the theater and has had a lot of experiences with that spirit. And I think there was a strong connection between the two. So we were really thankful that he was there. And we asked him if he would help us in her transitioning, and he did. We were actually able to help her cross. So,
What about the theater? Are people still reporting bumps and bangs and things that go, crash in the night?
Well, there were actually a lot of other spirits in the theater. Oh, really? I think all theaters tend to attract spirits because of the energy, the high energy that's in a theater. So we did encounter some other spirits here, but I don't really have a way to talk with anybody there to see if they are still seeing her. But in my experience, spirits that cross over do come back, but they're in a higher vibration. So they make an appearance, but it's not in that same state they were in before.
What about I love the name of the Green Beetle Tavern in Memphis? What's that all about?
That is the oldest operating bar or tavern that's continuously operating here in the city. And we got an invitation to go down there with a TV crew. And we did an investigation that lasted, I don't know, about 4 or 5 hours into the wee hours of the morning. What I had heard of was that there was a spirit there was throwing wine glasses. So we met the bartender. Of course, they didn't tell us any specifics or anything. So we made a connection with a young lady named Marilyn. And she either lived in an apartment above this bar area, when this is an old building that used to have apartments above. And she did not like the loud, she was like from the 1920s or 30s, and she did not like the loud rock and roll music they were playing there. She liked jazz, she liked that type of music. And so we advised the bartender, you know, to change the musical selection, or at least slip in a jazz song every once in a while, and to set a wine glass out for her. And since we went down there in October of last year, we helped her cross over. So
what a great story.
She hasn't thrown any more wine glasses.
Gee whiz. I know you've done investigations in other parts, but we can't leave Memphis without talking about Elvis. Of course we can't, because Elvis is still very much, even if he left the building, his presence is still very much, you know, around the building, I guess. And you told me that you have a story about Elvis?
Yeah, he did leave the building, but he comes back occasionally. So when Linda was in town...
Of course, there are some people, sorry to interrupt, there are some people who say that he never left, but that's a whole other story.
Sure. So when Linda was in town and we went to the Orpheum Theater, she's like the world's biggest Elvis fan. She loves Elvis. She has all kinds of memorabilia in her home in Jacksonville and so forth. And so, of course, she had to go to Graceland. She'd never been there before, right? So when you go to Graceland, you meet across the street in a building, and they put you on a bus and they take you up to the house. And then you walk up the front steps. The first room that you encounter in the house is... if you look to the right, there's a room. I guess it's still set up the same way, but when we were there 6-7 years ago, there was a big white piano in this room. So I'm standing against the door frame. Linda's next to me, and the other medium that was with us was beside her. And all of a sudden, I felt Linda just lean into me like she was going to collapse. And I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "He came up behind me and kissed me on the neck."
Oh, my God.
So she of course is clairvoyant, so she could see him. And he actually came up and gave her a little greeting and gave her a friendly kiss on the neck.
Right. So obviously, and they don't have protocols against that kind of thing in the spirit world. Okay.
Well, you know, Elvis is a very friendly guy.
Kind of sounds like it. But of course, Elvis, from what we see in the documentaries now, he is said to have not been very happy in his latter years, and he had his immediate crew around him, some of whom were very, very concerned about him towards the end, I understand. But his later years in Graceland were not happy years.
Right. Now, the way she described him looking was looked like he was in his late 20s, early 30s. Mm-hmm. So, and we've encountered that with other spirits when they manifest or show themselves to people that are clairvoyant. They always show themselves in their prime. So he was showing himself at the vibration and at the age that he felt. I think he felt that was his essence.
I would have thought. You were saying.
We also went through the rest of the house, of course, and at one point I felt this feminine energy that was really strong, and it turned out to be his grandmother. She apparently liked me a whole lot, and she followed me through parts of the house and until we got down to where they have a building with a lot of cars, and then she went back to wherever she'd come from. So, I think there's a lot of spirit activity at Graceland.
I have to ask you, how did you know it was her?
My medium friends talked to her. And they said it was Minnie Mae,
right?
The grandmother, yeah.
So, as far as you know, I presume a lot of ghost investigation teams go to Graceland and try and see if they can communicate with the great man.
I don't think they allow any investigations. Of course, we were just on a tour, and we just had those experiences as we were being shuffled through the house. So, I don't know if anybody has ever had permission to go in there and do a proper investigation. No, so I just had a few encounters along the way.
I guess it's not the kind of thing that they're going to be inviting people in to do, I guess. As no. I assumed, you went in there and you didn't tell them that's what you were. But it's just interesting because I guess if anybody was able to do an investigation, they would probably uncover some interesting things because, as we know, Elvis passed suddenly and it was a great shock, I'm sure, to him, and it was a huge shock to the world. So I'm sure there's much more to do about that. Of all the investigations that you have done, maybe you could tell me about one or two of the most scary or spooky ones that you've done. Not necessarily in Memphis, any of the other places you've been.
Scary ones? One time I was working with a medium named Stephanie, and I don't think I've ever told this story during an interview, but we were called to a house over in Middle Tennessee on the other side of Nashville. It was a young family that contacted us, and their kids were being terrorized. So we always, anytime there's a report of children being affected by spirits, I'm willing to travel much further than our 150-mile radius around Memphis. So this is quite a ways over there. But we were driving to this house, and the thing that happened before that was really disturbing was we were going down this country lane, and there was this really beautiful white horse, and it was bathed in sunlight. So I stopped. I said, I've got to get a picture of this. And I feel like the horse was there as a sign, as a warning of what was going to come. It almost had an angelic feel, the energy of it. So I feel like it was sent by our allies on the other side to say, be careful, be cautious here. So I got back in the car, we were driving down the road, and I looked up, and there was this apparition-type thing coming down the road in a wheelchair. It looked like an old, haggy woman. And I had to basically get off the road. It was coming right down the middle of the road, and so I had to kind of pull around it. And I said, "Did you see that?" And to my friend, and we turned around and looked, and it was gone. And so we went on to the house, and I told her, I said, "This doesn't feel right." And so I asked her to stay in the car, and I went up to the house and knocked on the door. And this man came to the door in a diaper, and there was no one else in the house. Mm-hmm. And I know it was at the right address and everything, so everything just felt completely wrong. And so I don't know if that was a trap we were being lured into or what. That person didn't speak to me. He just looked at me and turned around and shut the door. And I actually contacted that family, and they never responded again. So that was the weirdest one I don't think I ever told that story before, but that apparition was just chilling. And I don't even like to think about it.
Were you able to find out by doing any research who that might have been barreling down towards you in the wheelchair?
No, I just think it was an omen, like an evil omen in a sense, or a spirit trying to scare us away. I don't know if that family, I don't know why they never would respond. That was just the weirdest thing.
That sounds deeply, deeply weird. You did an investigation at a place with a great name. And a lot of these places have great names, but the Union Screaming House.
Right. That was early on. That was before I really knew anything about spirit rescue. And that's a house that was has actually been on some of the TV programs. I think A Haunting. It was featured on A Haunting. And the person who lived in the house has written a book about it. His name is Stephen LaChance. I don't remember the name of this book. He's written two, I think, about it.
Okay. But, and we have to say this is in Union, Missouri.
Union, Missouri. Yeah. So one of our team members had a relative who knew Stephen, and we got an invite to go up there. I think we were actually the first paranormal investigation team that went into the house. And there was definitely a malevolent male energy in one part of the house in the back. But he had a lot of experience there, and you can get the book and read about it all. But to me, it felt like just a incredibly malevolent male spirit was there. And I'm sure that was the epicenter and the cause of most of the activity. But at that point, I really didn't know much about, I didn't know anything about spirit rescue or how to deal with that. So we basically went in, got some evidence, and left. And again, after doing that for 2 or 3 years, it was like, okay, what's the point of this? Why go into someone's home with all this equipment, spend hours and hours, maybe stay overnight, record an EVP, or maybe have an experience of someone walking in front of a laser grid, and then, you know, leave and put these things on your website? What does that accomplish?
Well, so it seems to go so far and no further, doesn't it? You know, you get all these recordings of a disembodied electronic voice saying, you're not welcome here, and that's about as far as it goes, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I've got examples on our website just so people know we're capable of doing that. But again, you know, I don't want to spend hours and hours doing that. I want to go in and connect with whoever's there, find out why they're there, hear their story. I'm at an English medium. She was about 80 years old, and she was involved in what she described as sending circles or spirit rescue circles. And what they would do is meet weekly and then sing or do different activities to raise the vibration. They would actually attract spirit, earthbound spirits, to their circle. And then they would help them cross. So that was an inspiration to me. But the main thing she told me that I've always remembered is ask a lot of questions, because the more information you have, the more that they're able to tell their story, the more they're able to release the burdens that hold them here. So that's always our focus. We go in and we ask a lot of questions when we connect with the spirit. So they're able to tell us, you know, we're able to find out what their desires and needs are, and that will give you a clue as to how to help them best.
So it really is counseling, as you said.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have any of these spirits who you've helped to get to where they need to be, have any of them come and thanked you afterwards? Have any of them been grateful?
Many times they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll come back immediately and say thank you. Uh-huh. We had one case where there was a mother and a child, well, young boy, and what she told us was that she was not going to leave him. So we did some counseling with her and told her, you know, if you will go ahead and make this transition, your vibration will be higher and you'll be able to really help him heal. And when we said that word heal, that was crucial. So she did go ahead and transition. And I thought initially at that point, I thought, well, you know, when someone crosses over, there's probably a long period of time where they're healing or someone's working with them and, you know, trying to help them become more aware. Well, she came back immediately and she thanked us, and then she took him with her. So that was pretty surprising to me that happened so quickly.
Wow.
Yeah, many times they will come back and say thank you.
That's quite a story. So, you know, it's not thankless work is what I'm saying. There's a reward for it.
No, I mean, I expect when it comes my time to transition, I expect to see some of these spirits there, you know. Maybe they'll come and extend a hand to me. I hope so. I hope to see them again.
Well, maybe they have a kind of heavenly induction program, and they'll show you the ropes of being on the other side. Who knows? I mean, it's been difficult for the whole world because of coronavirus lockdown and all of the restrictions, which I think we probably have some of the most intensive ones in the world here in the UK. I'm not sure how it is for you, but what have you got planned?
Yeah, we're in our third phase of reopening. So actually, our movie theaters are starting to reopen, and we're up to 75% capacity in restaurants and that type of thing.
Okay.
But to protect our clients and also protect ourselves, we've been wearing masks whenever we go to someone's home. But you know, I was in the house last night, so I wore a mask, and that was okay. We've got an investigation this coming Friday night in a small town east of Memphis, and then the following week over in Arkansas. So we're continuing to work. Our mediums are also capable of working remotely. Jennifer in particular has done a couple of cases by herself, with one with a family in Oklahoma and one with a family in East Tennessee. So she's able to remote view, and so is Kayla. They can connect with someone at a house and actually see the house and find out who's there, and then do the counseling over the phone and telepathically with spirits, and then do a clearing, and that's the way it goes.
What do you think of people, and there are many of them, who form ghost investigation groups? You see their websites all the time. I've interviewed many of them, but they do it for fun. You're not doing this for fun.
No. I think a lot of people watch these television shows and they think, okay, I'm going to go out and buy some equipment and call myself a paranormal investigator. And they are in it for chills and thrills, and they will do that at the expense of the homeowner. So person's having a lot of disturbances in their home. They call in somebody. These people come in. They really don't have any experience. They're just wanting to see something or hear something and maybe put that on their website and hope they get a TV show out of it or something like that. So it's really sad, and it's really doesn't offer any help at all to the homeowner or to the spirits who are trapped there, you know, that need help. So we do a lot of cleanup work. You know, there are some groups in this area that are not helping in that sense, and they're more about evidence collection and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of instances where we have to go in behind people and actually offer the help that's needed. So
is this the kind of job that you're doing that you can kind of leave at the office? In other words, when you've been and done an investigation, are you able to close the book on it, or do the spirits sometimes come home with you?
Well, actually, I don't allow any spirits in my home.
You don't allow?
No. My guides work with me. They keep my house clear. I have a couple Native American guides, and they know that I need my quiet time. And now the mediums that I work with, Kaylin and Jennifer, the way they do it is they just kind of put a business close sign out, in a sense, visually. And so they turn the light out and they say business closed, and then if someone comes to them, they will say, you know, I'll help you, but I just can't do it right now, come back later.
And so you are able to close it down. I just have this vision of, you know, the movie with Whoopi Goldberg where she's playing a medium and the spirit won't leave her alone. You know, that movie was Ghost, wasn't it?
Yeah, the person that wrote that screenplay, I guess, doesn't realize that you can do it. You can actually shut your chakras down. That's the way I was trained. And but I personally, other than in my own home, I stay open all the time because I feel like it's my calling. Here's an example. We were going to a house over in East Tennessee to help the family that was being traumatized by children. The children were being traumatized by spirits, rather. I'm sorry. And it was a 600-mile round trip. So we were on the interstate, tooling along at about 70 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, I felt someone get in the car with us. And it was a gentleman who was searching for his mother. So now, Kayla and Jennifer were both closed down at the time, but I stay open all the time. So he got in the car, and I asked them, okay, I feel like there's someone here with us. Do you mind see if you can connect with him? And it turned out it was a gentleman from post-World War II, and he was presenting himself in a paratrooper's jacket. And so we were able to connect him with his mother, and he went on his merry way. But those things happen just everywhere.
Gee. Well, it's astonishing work you do, and it's quite unlike, well, I haven't spoken with anybody else who does this kind of thing. Yes, I've spoken to people who say that they're exorcists, but that's a different kind of thing. What you're doing is not really an exorcism, is it?
No, it's counseling, and it's just providing them with information as to their options.
Do you ever come across spirits that want to fight with you?
You know, we went to a house, Kayla and Jennifer and I have been working together about a year and a half. Now, I've worked with other people. I've been involved in two other teams over the years, and then I did a lot of solo work and worked with a lot of different mediums. But the three of us have been together for about a year and a half. And one house we went to, I think most people would have interpreted this particular spirit as a malevolent or evil person. He was an alcoholic. And what had happened was he had killed his fiance in a car accident when he was driving drunk. So, of course, there was a lot of guilt there. There was a lot of regret and anger. And he was actually able to almost overshadow anyone who came into his space. He made me feel drunk when I walked into the area he was in, mostly. But again, we approach every single situation with compassion. And we are all energy channels, the three of us. So we're able to project higher vibrational energy to a spirit that's in that kind of emotional distress. And through working with him and counseling him and finding out what had happened and explaining to him the options, his his mood lightened, and all of a sudden he was not, you know, he was not aggressive anymore. He was listening to us, and he was ready to, you know, to be back with his fiance. So if we had gone in there and provoked, or, you know, to get a response from him, yeah, of course he would have become angrier, right? But again, since we do it compassionately and we try to find out the reason behind the behavior, we're almost able to work with just about everybody.
Right. Last question. You sent me an email about your mm-hmm. work, and I'm glad you did. I've enjoyed this conversation. Why was that? You clearly want people around the world to know about your work.
Yes, I would like more people to know about Spirit Rescue, that's an option rather than just, I think most of the people that are out there involved in the paranormal investigation field, it's more of a quest for phenomena, for proof that, you know, there's something beyond this life. And that was, you know, that was something I searched for in the beginning. I was in a theater about 2 or 3 years into my investigation work, and we were playing what I call period music. It was a young girl that had been seen in the theater. It's a different one than the Orpheum. But this girl was always seen in Victorian clothing. So I found some children's songs from like 1900, and we were playing a particular song, and she spoke out loud. So that to me was the proof that I needed, you know, that there was actually a spirit world around us. Mm. And after that, I was like, I'm not interested in EVPs and this type of thing anymore. I want to help these poor souls that are, you know, I was a child. She was separated from her family. So that's where it all changed for me that night. And I just want to tell more and more people about Spirit Rescue. I'm actually writing a book about it. Mm-hmm. I'm about halfway finished. So I will, you know, I'll describe how we do it. There are all kinds of different ways that I've met different people that do Spirit Rescue work, but the particular way that we do it, and then some of the interesting personalities in the spirit world that I've encountered, and how to work with those different types of personalities.
Well, when that book is out, we need to talk again if you'd like to. Okay. It's fascinating and moving work that you do. It must be really heartrending at times.
It is. And, you know, speaking about children, that used to really disturb me when I would encounter a spirit child. It's like, why didn't an angel come and take this child across? But, you know, children are just little people. They have free will. And what I've discovered over the years is that there is always a family relative who is with that child, a crossed over relative that's kind of guarding the child.
Like a chaperone,
yeah. Yeah, almost like a guardian angel. There's always someone there. So they're never alone. But, you know, that child may need that experience. I've worked with some children that just I could not help them cross. They just were not ready. But at least they know that those loved ones are waiting on them. So I think after thinking about it for a while, a lot of them go ahead and decide to cross over.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed and been fascinated by this conversation, I guess is the only word that I can use. If people want to check out that great website that you designed, where do they go?
Okay, it's MemphisGhostInvestigations.com. That's investigations, plural. Also, they can get to the same place by going to MemphisSpiritRescue.com. And we have a Facebook page. So if you search for Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue, you can also find us there.
Glad you sent me that email. Stephen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Howard. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about Spirit Rescue. It's my passion.
Wow, some great stories from the Memphis Ghost Investigation and Spirit Rescue team. Stephen Williams, thank you very much. Your thoughts about him? Future guest suggestions? If you want to shoot the breeze or do anything you like, you can go to my website, theunexplained.tv. More great guests in the pipeline here at The Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And whatever you do, please stay safe. Please, wherever you are in the world, stay calm. And please, stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.